It's Thursday, the 15th of January, 2026, and you're listening to Weekly Revel here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman in Flagstaff, bringing you news of interest to our veterans community here in Arizona. Today we have news from our military news websites, as well as the Veterans Service Organizations publications and websites, and of course, the announcements from the Veterans Administration. Starting today, we go to stripes.com, the official website of the Stars and Stripes newspaper, for this first headline by Matthew Adams. Department of War rebrand could cost from 10 to hundreds of millions of dollars, CBO says. Washington. The cost to implement the Department of War name change ranges from $10 million to $125 million, but it could rise to hundreds of millions, the Congressional Budget Office said Wednesday. The CBO assesses that making the change would be a few million dollars for modest implementation if it occurred within the Office of the Secretary of Defense to increasingly higher levels for a full-scale adoption. CBO's estimate is uncertain because the Defense Department has not provided information about how it plans to implement the order, the Budget Office wrote in an 11-page letter. Costs would be at least a few million dollars if the Defense Department phased in a minimal implementation, but they could be as large as $125 million if the name change was implemented broadly and rapidly throughout the department. A statutory renaming could cost hundreds of millions of dollars depending on how Congress and the Defense Department chose to implement the change. President Donald Trump in September signed an executive order instructing the Pentagon to begin using the name Department of War in official communications and to pursue actions that would permanently rename the Defense Department. The secretary title has not been approved by Congress. The department's website, social media accounts, and some signage at the Pentagon have since been changed to reflect the renaming. In November, a new Department of War plaque was installed at the Pentagon's main entrance for visiting VIPs. The department did not provide a cost at the time. NBC News reported the cost could be as high as $2 billion. A group of Senate Democrats in September called for a formal cost assessment of the president's order. 10 senators asked the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, or CBO, to come up with a price tag for adapting the new name, including the cost of changing signage, stationery, and other department materials. The intensity of adopting the name change could range from very minor changes in letterhead and signs at the highest level to full-scale adoption throughout each organization, including changes to all name badges, parking permits, challenge coins, and promotional items such as jackets and shirts, the CBO letter says. Senator Jeff Merkley, Democrat of Oregon, who led the charge to get the review, called the rename performative government at its worst. Simply put, Trump does not have the authority to rename DOD without an act of Congress. This move is performative government at its worst and does nothing to advance national security or help service members and their families, Markley said in a statement. The final figure would likely hinge on the extent of replacement for signage, letterhead, nameplates, and digital coding related to the department's many websites. And that's Department of War rebrand could cost from $10 million to hundreds of millions, CBO says. Next, we have two bills prioritize rehab and research for veterans with traumatic brain injuries. This is by Linda F. Hershey of Stars and Stripes from the 14th of January, Washington. New treatment for the devastating effects of traumatic brain injuries would be developed and tested in a $30 million pilot program that aims to expand rehabilitation programs for veterans to regain physical functions. The Veterans TBI Breakthrough Exploration of Adaptive Care Opportunities Nationwide Act, also known as the BEACON Act, would direct the Department of Veterans Affairs to fund grants for nonprofits to develop, implement, and evaluate non-drug therapies known as neuro-rehabilitation programs. The bill is one of two pieces of legislation that the House Veterans Affairs Subcommittee on Health heard Tuesday for advancing research and care for traumatic brain injuries. Nearly one in five of the 2.5 million veterans who served in Iraq and Afghanistan sustained at least one traumatic brain injury, according to the VA. TBI has been diagnosed in 400,000 veterans since 2000. The second bill, the Blast Overpressure Research and Mitigation Task Force Act, would establish a dedicated group to examine the effects of blast injuries that can cause TBI and explore strategies for treatment. The subcommittee met in a two-hour hearing to get a first look at a dozen bills that focus on critical health care needs of veterans. Other bills previewed Tuesday address opioid dependence, suicide prevention, post-traumatic stress disorder, and the scarcity of doctors in some rural areas. The opioid epidemic is a disaster, said Representative Greg Landsman, Democrat of Ohio, who testified in support of the No Pain for Veterans Act. Opioids are powerful narcotics for managing pain, but long-term use can lead to addiction. The bill would make it easier for veterans to obtain non-opioid medication from VA hospitals and clinics, Landsman said. Many VA doctors currently are directed to provide opioids without considering non-addictive alternatives, he said. Regarding TBI legislation, Wounded Warrior Project, Mission Roll Call, and other veterans groups testified about the need to identify and treat veterans with the injuries. Veterans with service-connected head injuries may develop serious mental health problems and are at greater risk of suicide, the group said. Good policy begins with listening to the veterans community, said Jim Whaley, an Army veteran and CEO of Mission Roll Call, which supports both TBI-related bills. Veterans want quicker access to care at the VA and in the community, he said. TBI has a spiraling effect. When access to care is early, the effects can be mitigated, Whaley said. The Beacon Act would send grants of up to $5 million to nonprofits and universities to test promising therapies for mild TBI, according to the bill. The bill also prioritizes the development of rehab programs that do not involve treating veterans with prescription drugs. Therapies would include neuro-rehabilitation programs that help restore physical functions for people with brain and spinal cord injuries and diseases. Brain health must be a lifelong priority, said Elizabeth McCoy, Associate Director of Government Affairs at Wounded Warrior Project. McCoy emphasized the need for more studies to track brain injuries and gauge the effectiveness of treatments, which is supported in the Beacon Act. But the American Psychological Association raised concerns about the bill. Kay Conwell Smith, Deputy Chief for Military and Veterans Policy at the Association, said the Beacon Act increases research on mild traumatic brain injury and mental health interventions outside the VA network. He said the bill could duplicate programs at the VA and dilute care efforts. This approach could undermine the bedrock of rigorous scientific study that is the gold standard of existing VA traumatic brain injury research and treatment, Smith said. And that's two bills prioritize rehab and research for veterans with traumatic brain injuries. We'll turn now to Military Times for this article. One chance to get it right. VA Secretary pledges VHA improvements. This is from the 13th of January by Patricia Keim. A planned overhaul of Veterans Health Administration will improve veterans care by creating a centralized system that better supports hospitals and clinics, which in turn will increase their focus on patients, Veterans Affairs Secretary Doug Collins said Monday. The department released an overview in December of its plans to reduce the FHA's administrative footprint to include eliminating roughly 26,000 open positions, with an aim to streamline what the administration calls an overburdensome and complex bureaucracy. Under the plan, the VHA will reduce administrative duplication, increase accountability and oversight, and improve focus on patients, according to officials. Some lawmakers and veterans advocates say the cuts will further strain a system that lost 30,000 employees to early retirements and resignations last year, resulting in more patients heading to the private sector for medical care or facing longer wait times at the VA. But speaking to reporters at the Veterans Affairs Medical Center in Baltimore, Maryland on Monday, Collins said the reorganization could result in improvements to services with clinics and hospitals on the front lines and everyone else in VHA supporting them. Citing the Baltimore facility as an example, Collins noted that the hospital downsized by roughly 200 people 2 years ago and saw wait times decrease and quality increase. "The issue is not how many people we have, it's how well we're using those people," Collins said, according to a recording of the press briefing reviewed by Military Times. According to Collins, details of the reorganization plans, including personnel changes, will be released in early February, with the changes expected to take at least 18 months. Some of the reforms spelled out in the broad documents include reducing the number of regional networks from 18 to 5, and reorganizing smaller district offices, eliminating several key administrative jobs, and shifting program offices. VA officials said last month that they looked at national healthcare models and organizations at top healthcare systems to craft their plans. Members of National Nurses United held a rally Thursday in the Bronx to protest cuts at the New York City's VA facilities, 383 across four boroughs. The cuts, they said, would exacerbate the already dire staffing shortages and could lead to a drastic deterioration of veteran care. "It's absolutely gut-wrenching to see this administration take their axes to the VA and brutally hack away at this world-class institution, the only healthcare system in the country specifically designed to care for veterans and to address their unique needs." Sharda Fornarino, a registered nurse and secretary of the VA Division for National Nurses Organizing Committee, National Nurses United, said in a statement. Collins said that the VA is striving to preserve provider positions and jobs slated to be eliminated have been vacant for more than a year, with VA leadership and hospitals approving the reductions. "There is a safety valve for every hospital and clinic in this system. They need somebody, they can hire somebody. There's nobody telling them not to," Collins said. Critics of the plans point out that while preserving doctor and provider positions is admirable, administrative roles play an important part in functioning, ensuring that clinicians can focus on patients without having to do support work. One hospital administrator told Military Times that after a manager moved to a different job in another state, a medical facility was left without a top administrator because his position, left open by the transfer, was eliminated. "Must be noted that a lot of these support positions are very important to the function of the VHA," said the administrator, who asked that their name and location not be used because they were not authorized to speak to the press. Veteran service organizations such as Paralyzed Veterans of America and Disabled American Veterans have expressed favor for reducing what they've called administrative barriers to care and say they look forward to learning more about the reorganization. "Based on the way this was briefed, if it works the way it is intended, it gives us hope that many of these administrative barriers, and there are many of them across VHA, will be knocked down," said Carl Blake, CEO of PVA. Referring to a mantra of the National Cemetery Administration, Collins said the VHA has to get it right. "I love the saying, the NCA has, and that is, they have one chance to get it right. I think that should be the thing for all of us at the VA. We have that one chance to get it right," Collins said. Details of Collins' visit to the Baltimore VA were first reported by Politico Pro. And that's One Chance to Get It Right, VA Secretary Pledges VHA Improvements. Our next item is from The War Horse by Natanya Friedheim, and it's reported on militarytimes.com. A veteran's search for healing led to an Ibogaine trip and an epiphany. This is from the 9th of January. The editor's note is this article first appeared on The War Horse, an award-winning nonprofit news organization educating the public on military service under the headline, A Veteran's Search for Healing Led to an Ibogaine Trip and an Epiphany. I've got to let it go. Mark Dervais sat straight-backed in a circle of 10 men at a clinic in Tijuana, Mexico. The glass window behind him looked out on a pool deck and a Pacific Ocean beyond. Inside, sunglasses masked his eyes and a beard grew down to his chest. His blank expression invited no sympathy, and Dervais had none to give. "Sorry if this offends anyone," he said at the introductory circle, "but I really don't care about any of you. I'm here for me." Dervais knew the men would be curious about his amputation. He mentioned losing his right arm in Afghanistan, but had no intention of sharing more. Each man had his own reason to visit the clinic, where patients pay around $8,000 for a psychedelic treatment with little scientific backing. They all hoped suffering through a brain-bending, vomit-inducing existential jolt would cure their ailments, which range from malaise to traumatic brain injury. A veteran of Iraq and Afghanistan wars, Dervais had one foot in the grave before contacting Ambio Life Sciences. 2 months earlier, he'd spent 2 days in a hospital back home in Colorado Springs with alcohol poisoning that he hoped would end his life. "Peace was totally gone in this house," said Michaela Dervais, his wife of 26 years. Dervais called the clinic after leaving the hospital. The earliest it could schedule him was April 2026, a 9-month wait. Dervais told the man on the phone he would be dead by then. Two companies operating clinics in Tijuana, Ambio Life Sciences and the Mission Within Center, said they've treated about 3,000 U.S. veterans in the last decade. Both used the psychedelics Ibogaine, derived from the root of a Central African shrub, and 5-MeO-DMT, a chemical secreted by the Sonoran Desert Toad. A common motivation among participants has emerged. The talk therapy and prescriptions offered by the Department of Veterans Affairs proved ineffective. Every time Brianna Morgan opens the clinic's oversized wooden door and shows patients into the foyer where a half dozen staffers wait to greet them, she assumes it's the worst day of their lives. "They're not here because they really want to be here," Morgan, Ambio's guest experience manager, said in an interview. "They're here because it's their only option." This is the story of one of those guests, a broken veteran whose Ibogaine experience would put him face to face with everyone in his life he'd ever wronged. His tears would soak through the eye mask patients wear to limit sensory input. Back home, confronted by another tragedy, Dervais would quickly regret his visit to the Cliffside Mansion and resent the clinic that took thousands of dollars from him. Then, 4 months later, he would return. Medical research and coastal retreats. For decades, overseas drug rehab clinics have offered Ibogaine to people addicted to cocaine and opioids. The drug's use among military veterans has surged over the last 4 years. Despite support from veterans, a push for more research, and efforts by advocates to legalize the psychedelic treatment in the United States, much remains unknown about the drug's long-term effectiveness and safety. The Federal Drug Enforcement Administration considers both Ibogaine and 5-MeO-DMT Schedule I substances, meaning the agency finds both have a high potential for abuse and no accepted medical use. Psychedelic medicine advocates fear the expensive, decade-long process of bringing a new drug to market in the U.S. will adulterate both the drugs and the environments in which people take them. Researchers, meanwhile, fear media hype and the proliferation of ceremonies replete with New Age rhetoric and dubious claims will undermine their efforts to gain FDA approval. As debates play out at state legislatures and research conferences, it is here in a coastal retreat center down the road from an open-air fruit stand that veterans come in a desperate attempt to find relief. A live day. Dervais' journey to the clinic began more than a decade ago. It was September 2009 in eastern Afghanistan. Corn grew 8 feet high on either side of the unpaved road outside of Jalalabad. Dervais clutched the passenger's seat grab handle as the mine-resistant ambush-protected vehicle rumbled along. A platoon sergeant with 15 years as an Army infantryman under his belt, Dervais felt invincible. He'd survived a bullet to his helmet during his first deployment to Iraq. On his second, he spent 16 grinding months guarding nighttime construction crews in Baghdad. His convoy drove in a tight pack. That day, a gap formed between his truck and the three others ahead, Dervais said. The enemy took full advantage. Dervais bent over a junction box to fiddle with a defective cord, his right arm still clutching the grab handle. When he looked up, he saw a man outside, a rocket-propelled grenade mounted on his shoulder, aimed at Dervais. A big flash, pressure and heat, Dervais collapsed over the junction box, his right arm, wristwatch still attached, landed in the driver's lap. He came to as the driver, his foot still on the gas, pulled Dervais up by his helmet. Another RPG shot through the passenger door and out the roof. The truck caught fire and filled with smoke. Chunks of flesh and bone covered the side of the cab. Dervais heard screaming. Someone else is hurt, he thought. Someone else in the truck is either dead or hurt. His body tingled. His vision grew blurry. A man with a belt-fed machine gun emerged from the stalks of corn. Somehow, the truck kept moving forward. "Drive, drive, don't stop," Dervais said as the bullets shattered the windshield. He spent 8 months recovering at an Army hospital in San Antonio, Texas, then returned to Fort Carson, Colorado, just as his unit got back from Afghanistan. He and the driver finally had time to look back. Dervais longed to fill gaps in his memory. "Who was screaming?" Dervais remembers asking. "It was you," the driver said. Life after war. Like so many Americans, Dervais battled prescription opioid addiction after his surgeries. He faced a personal crisis described by many veterans of adopting to a civilian life that lacks the structure, urgency, and adrenaline soldiers grow accustomed to at war. He sought thrill as a U.S. Paralympic snowboarder. He and his wife began cave diving. As a volunteer for the nonprofit Team River Runner, he designed prosthetics for adaptive kayaking. He helped launch the Colorado Springs chapter of the nonprofit Wounded Warrior Project. He instructs children with disabilities in snowboarding. More than a decade of athleticism landed him several rib fractures, a concussion, a bruised lung, and 3 surgeries on his left arm, all between 2021 and 2025. So damaged was his left arm, his only arm, he could hold neither a Voodoo Ranger beer can nor his Basset Hound puppy, Ruby. The pain led him to spiral. Hours before traveling to Tijuana, Dervais paced around the lobby of the Sheraton San Diego Resort. A hotel staffer asked if he was okay. The night before, his wife blocked the hotel room door to prevent Dervais from leaving. Sober for 3 months, a requirement of attending the clinic, Dervais wanted a drink. He feared the treatment, a last-ditch effort to address his deteriorating mental health and excessive drinking, would fail. 2 SUVs pulled up in front of the hotel's entryway fountain. It was a Tuesday morning in early August. Dervais sat alone in the back seat as one of the drivers piled luggage into the trunks. "How's it going, man?" asked Brad Banks, a medical device salesman trying to quit drinking as he slid next to Dervais. Maintaining his forward gaze, Dervais barely grunted. The men rode in silence past the border checkpoints where Mexican officers wore rifles slung across their chests. In the beachside community of Playas de Tijuana, the SUVs turned down an unpaved road. Across from a cluster of shanties, a concrete wall fortifies the clinic, an 11-bedroom compound where foreigners come and go each week. A stay at Ambio starts with an EKG, one of the many medical tests the clinic requires to ensure patients are fit for Ibogaine. The drug has a narrow therapeutic window, meaning a little more than effective dose can be toxic. Too much can cause heart arrhythmias. A 2022 review of literature published on Ibogaine found 38 deaths and 20 medical emergencies associated with its use documented in medical literature. In most of those cases, the drug was used to treat opioid addiction. Other emergencies may have gone undocumented given Ibogaine's use in non-medical settings. Both Ibogaine and 5-MeO-DMT can exacerbate existing mania or psychosis, according to Martin Polanco, a doctor who founded the Mission Within Center in Tijuana. 3 hours after arrival, the men changed into swim trunks and crowded back into the Suburbans. Gervais' tough guy veneer started melting away on the drive to a backyard sweat lodge. "I think it's time we discuss sweat lodge etiquette," he said from the back seat, squished beside two passengers. "No farting in the sweat lodge. Don't come here to get high." Few people report enjoying their experience on Ibogaine. Many have visions. Some see deceased relatives. To some patients' chagrin, they see and feel nothing. People who've taken Ibogaine refer to the frequent vomiting during the more than 10-hour trip as purging and frame it as part of the healing experience. The men sat around the large wooden dining table on Wednesday, the morning before they took Ibogaine. Over French toast and chicken enchiladas, Isaac Pulido told them he could not predict how they'd feel that night. "Many years of doing this and we still don't have the power," he said. Pulido estimates he's overseen more than 4,000 treatments over the last 16 years. A nurse with a doctorate specializing in intensive care, he oversees treatments at all Ambio's clinics in Mexico. "Remember, we come here to get healed. We don't come here to get high," he told the men. "But if you get high, oh my God, embrace it. Enjoy it." Doses at Ambio vary based on each patient's body weight. If the person feels nothing after about 2 hours, they can take a booster pill. It's possible lower, non-hallucinogenic doses have benefits without cardiotoxicology, said David Olson, a professor at the University of California. Davis and director at the UC Davis Institute for Psychedelics and Neurotherapeutics. But a lot of people who take hallucinogenic drugs want to trip out and end up disappointed if they don't. They expect to see unicorns and all that shit, Pulido said in an interview. Gervais did not see unicorns. Dante's Inferno. Around 10 p.m. that night, the men had swallowed their third pill. They collected pillows and descended stairs to the clinic's treatment room. Twin mattresses lined the walls, each with a mirror propped in front of it. The men sat cross-legged on the edge of their mattresses like preschoolers getting ready for nap time. They shook rattles and stared in their mirrors. Over the next hour, lo-fi music gave way to a chaotic mix of plucked string instruments, traditional ceremonial Gabonese music. Six nurses, two paramedics, and two doctors kept watch over the patients who wore heart monitors throughout the night. As Gervais shook his rattle, his reflection showed him something evil, as he recalled, 36 hours after his Ibogaine trip. He tried to smile or change his expression. He slid on an eye mask and lay back to visions he feared would continue all night. Wave after wave of people he'd wronged. Each time he tried to apologize, a new vision appeared. The drug exacerbated the severe tinnitus in his left ear. When he lifted his mask, Gervais saw the room on fire with piles of bodies and people retching. In the early afternoon the following day, as the drug's effects waned, Gervais looked in the mirror. His big brown eyes looked back at him. His downturned and angry brows had vanished. Ibogaine's effect on the brain has long puzzled pharmacologists. The drug reduces depression and anxiety and blocks drug withdrawal, said Deborah Mash, a pioneering Ibogaine researcher who received FDA approval to study the drug in the mid-1990s. While Ibogaine leaves the blood within 24 hours, its metabolite norabogaine, What the liver creates after processing ibogaine stays in the body longer. Norbogaine pumps the brain with dopamine, the neurotransmitter associated with mood and motivation. Drug abuse and depression are associated with dopamine deficiency. You're helping to restore dopamine homeostasis in the brain, Mash said. The enduring effect is a question that neuroscience hasn't completely worked out. The second trip. The men ambled back to their rooms around midday Thursday. The sleepover party had ended. Many people experience hangover symptoms after the hallucinogenic effects of ibogaine wear off. Only a few of the patients made it to breakfast the following morning. After a day of rest, the men would inhale another psychedelic, a synthetic version of 5-MeO-DMT. The men circled up in the living room around noon Friday. An Ambio employee's prelude to the upcoming drug sounded like a warning. For the people who are going to be here waiting there for their turn, she said, if you hear someone screaming for their lives or yelling like they're about to die or something, don't worry about it. It's absolutely normal. Controversy exists over whether 5-MeO-DMT should be used in conjunction with ibogaine. There's no good medical or scientific reason for that at all, said Albert Garcia Raumu, an associate professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences who studies psychedelics at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. Dervais sat in a hallway waiting his turn. He'd arrived at the clinic indifferent to others. Now he couldn't stop thinking about a fellow patient, a young man whose bad ibogaine trip caused him to cry throughout the night. The sounds of wailing traveled down the hallway from a room where another patient, a fellow veteran, took 5-MeO-DMT. I have a feeling this is going to hurt, Dervais said. It's okay, I've got to let it go. I have to let all this go. I don't want to carry it anymore. When his turn came, Dervais sat on a cluster of mattresses covered in serape blankets. He inhaled vapor from a pipe and lay back. In less than a minute, he began to cry. Holy shit, he said, starting to sit up before lying back down to convulsions. Dervais came out of the trip ready for a second dose. How do you feel? The woman asked after he sat up minutes later. I feel reborn, he said, his eyelashes wet with tears. 5 days later, back home in Colorado, Dervais updated the group on his progress via their Signal chat. He'd gone to Costco. I don't go to Costco, he wrote. It was amazing. I didn't feel like I wanted to strangle anyone. There was no anxiety, fear, or anger. I felt safe. Trauma returns. If patients experience stress after taking psychedelics, the drugs can do more damage than good, according to Gul Dolan, a professor of neuroscience at the University of California, Berkeley. Dolan's work found psychedelics reopen critical periods, windows when the brain is more sensitive to its environment and more capable of learning during early childhood and other critical periods. In the same way, a person who just had open-heart surgery shouldn't climb stairs, people who take psychedelics shouldn't expose themselves to traumatic events. Think of this as open-mind surgery, Dolan said. For Dervais, the trauma returned less than a month after returning from Ambio. He lost a friend to suicide. The devastation ripped through his community of friends. In a Zoom call hosted by an Ambio counselor for about 30 former patients, frustration mounted. The healing stopped. Dervais started drinking. Regression, he said. Suddenly, he questioned everything about his ibogaine journey. The healing, the expense, the hope. I was angry for even going there and wasting my time and money. Still, his wife, Michaela, noticed subtle changes. He was showing less rage on the road and making progress on letting things that upset him go. After the next 3 months, he read more books than he had willingly read in his life, including A Lifetime at War, about a veteran more severely wounded than Dervais. It was like, wake the fuck up, man, Dervais said, because you're not the only one that's out there hurting. Instead of retreating, he doubled down. In early December, as the first snow peppered Colorado Springs, Dervais packed his bag. Like a growing number of Ambio's patients, he was returning. Things fell into place quickly. A spot became available at the clinic. A nonprofit agreed to sponsor his trip. At a fireside ceremony before taking Ibogaine for a second time, Dervais vowed never to touch alcohol again. He has new goals, he said, and the tools to maneuver through life. Prayer, meditation, plus treatments like magnetic e-resonance therapy for his post-traumatic stress and traumatic brain injuries. He said he might go back to Ambio again. Michaela Dervais met her husband at the San Diego airport as he returned from his second trip to Mexico. She looked into his face. The soft eyes and smile were back. The ups and downs have left her exhausted. Even though everything seems wonderful right now, there could be just something happening and it'll go downhill, she said. For now, she's hopeful. She sees how hard he's trying. With this new treatment, I'm thinking we're at peace. This Warhorse news story was edited by Mike Frankel, fact-checked by Jess Ronan, and copy-edited by Mitchell Hansen DeWar. Hisranthi Pickett wrote the headlines. And it was, A Veteran's Search for Healing Led to an Ibogaine Trip and an Epiphany. You're listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. Remember, you can listen to Weekly Reveille and other Sun Sounds of Arizona programming on the Sun Sounds of Arizona website at sunsounds.org. Additionally, you could download the Sun Sounds of Arizona app for your iPhone or iPad from the Apple App Store or your Android phone or tablet from the Google Play Store. And you can listen to Weekly Reveille streaming on your Amazon Dot, Echo, or Show. Let's turn to the American Legion magazine for January. And we have this article, Metabolism Myths Debunked. Small meals, exercise may be less of a booster than thought. This article is by Martin Sayers. Metabolism refers to the physical and chemical processes your body uses to convert or use energy, from breathing and circulation to digestion and muscle contraction. Yet there are probably more myths about how to boost metabolism than there are successful techniques to boost it, says Morton Tavel, a physician specialist in internal medicine and former clinical professor at Indiana University School of Medicine. The danger is that they can lead people to think they're burning off more calories than they actually are, which results in overeating and weight gain. Here are four myths about metabolism and the truth behind them. Certain foods do wonders for your metabolism. So-called metabolism boosters such as green tea, caffeine, and hot chili peppers offer minimal benefits. Caffeine can boost metabolism by up to 11%, but to achieve this, you need to drink a cup of coffee every 2 hours for 12 hours daily, which is neither healthy nor sustainable. And studies showed capsaicin, found in hot peppers, decreased energy intake by only 74 calories per meal. Exercise leads to sustained metabolism increases. The metabolic boost from exercise dissipates in several hours, not days or weeks. Even after a hard workout, your body doesn't keep burning calories at a high rate for long. One study found that subjects who burned 519 calories during intense cycling burned only an extra 190 calories over the next 14 hours compared to days they didn't exercise. Eating frequent, small meals boosts metabolism. Science doesn't support grazing as an effective weight control strategy. A study in the journal Obesity found that people who ate 6 small meals per day burned the same amount of fat over 24 hours as people who ate 3 regular meals. Eating more frequently may actually increase hunger. Older people gain weight due to decreased metabolism. While the basal metabolic rate does decrease with age, weight gain mostly stems from lifestyle changes, not metabolism alone. Energy requirements decrease as we get older due to less physical activity, and that can lead to muscle loss and fat gain. As you age, your body's natural appetite regulation can become less effective. Younger people naturally eat less after a big meal until their body uses up that energy. But older adults may not get those I'm Still Full Signals. Our author, Martin Sayers, is a freelance writer living in Cambridge, England, specializing in health and nutrition. And that article was Metabolism Myths Debunked from the American Legion magazine. Next, we have information from the Veterans Administration, and our first is a flyer that I received in email. Are you a veteran with questions or concerns about airborne hazards and burn pits? Get information and answers you need. Airborne Hazards and Burn Pits, What You Need to Know, a class for veterans. Veterans attend virtually through WebEx, an easy access platform, a meeting platform, via a personal computer, smartphone, or tablet. The class was previously offered in 2024. On Thursday, January 22nd, 2026, at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. The presenters, Anais Sotolongo, MD, Director, Airborne Hazards and Burn Pits Center of Excellence, Michelle Robertson, MD, MPH, Environmental Medicine Physician, and Komal Mehta, RPAC, MPAS, Physician's Assistant. Topics will be defining airborne hazards, clinical effects of airborne hazards and open burn pit registry, tips to manage common symptoms, and you can register at Veterans Affairs, one word, veteransaffairs.webex, that's WebEx, .com, veteransaffairs.webex.com/weblink/register, and there's a string of numbers and letters after that. So what you would go do is go to that veteransaffairswebex.com and search for airborne hazards and burn pits. After registration, participants will receive an email with the invite link and access to resources. Participants will also receive an email reminder the day before the class. Participants cannot share their invitation link, and anyone who wants to attend must register themselves. Using someone else's invite will not grant access. Class access will begin 15 minutes before start time, and you can email WRIISCEXPRTCenter. That's all one word, WRIISCEXPRTCenter@va.gov with subject header Airborne Hazards Class if you're having difficulty with registration. And that is a seminar on January 22nd, Airborne Hazards and Burn Pits, What You Need to Know. Next, from news.va.gov, we have this article, Did You Hear That? This is from the 8th of January by Rachel Everett, Public Affairs Specialist, Edward Hines Jr. VA Hospital. Schedule a hearing test with VA. Did you hear that? For years, Army veteran Kevin McGovern's answer to that question would be a resounding no. The 67-year-old's hearing loss not only affected his ability to communicate with his family and friends, but also to hear critical information over the dispatch while supervising the Kankakee County 911 Center. Hearing loss made things more challenging, said McGovern. There were times when I had to bring in a natural listener at work and have them confirm what I heard over the dispatch. McGovern recalled not being able to hear out of his left ear despite wearing hearing aids. When watching television with his wife one night, he cleaned and replaced the left aid as well as changed the receiver, but nothing helped. He then decided to seek help from Edward Hines Jr. VA Hospital audiologists, specifically Dr. Stacy Sturg-Gulewski, who suggested he proceed with getting cochlear implants. In July 2022, McGovern underwent cochlear implant surgery for his left ear and could understand speech following the implant activation. I went back to work the same day as the surgery, said McGovern. I had people come into my office to talk to me. It was amazing to be able to hear and understand their speech. Over time, McGovern began to comprehend sounds he didn't remember hearing before, such as the ice maker dishwasher, and garbage truck. Due to the success of his first cochlear implant, he obtained his right implant in May 2023. Following the procedure, McGovern said he felt even more confident in personal and professional communication situations. Research helps with hearing loss. As a result, he's used his newfound hearing to partake in educational research. McGovern participated in a hearing study at the University of Illinois where engineering students were studying how you process sounds. He recently accepted an invitation from Purdue University to undergo a study examining how those with hearing devices process speech. McGovern credits his experience with Heinz VA Audiology's clinic as life-changing. Communication can be hard with natural ears, and when you take that away, it's even harder, said McGovern. Getting this cochlear implant technology has allowed me to re-engage with my family, friends, and professional world. McGovern's experience is a reason Dr. Sturgluewski's wakes up every day. When I work with cochlear implant patients, I see the dramatic difference in their quality of life, and when we can offer them an implantable option that gives them that access back to being able to communicate with their friends and family, it is so motivating. The positive difference cochlear implants made in McGovern's life has prompted him to encourage other veterans experiencing hearing loss to seek help from the Heinz Audiology team. I'd encourage anyone struggling to hear and who thinks they may have hearing issues to go through the testing process with their audiologist, said McGovern. It's never too late to apply for VA health care you've earned. If you are a veteran and know a veteran who's not yet applied for their VA health care benefits, learn how to get started. You can do that at www.choose.va.gov/health. This article was originally published on the VA Heinz Healthcare System site and has been edited for style and clarity. Did you hear that? Schedule a hearing test with VA. Next, from news.va.gov, we have VA flu vaccination clinics help veterans stay healthy this season. Prevention is key as VA facilities nationwide make vaccines easy and accessible. From the 16th of November, by Michael Cole, Chief Communication and Community Engagement, West Texas VA Healthcare System. As flu season approaches, VA medical centers are ramping up their annual vaccination efforts. The flu vaccine is one of the best ways to help reduce the risk of serious illness, need for hospital care, or complications. Veterans may be able to get a flu vaccine when they're at a VA facility for an appointment. In addition, many VA facilities offer flu shot clinics and walk-in vaccination options. This makes it easier and more convenient for veterans to get protected. Our goal is to make it easy as possible for veterans to get their flu shot, said Amy Grant, a registered nurse at West Texas VA Healthcare System. Prevention is always better than treatment, and just a few minutes today can help protect veterans and their loved ones all season long. Convenience and confidence in care. Veterans often find the flu shot process simple, efficient, and reassuring. I literally walked right in, got my flu shot, and was out the door all within 15 minutes, said Navy veteran Edward Covington. VA couldn't have made it any easier. The process was excellent. VA flu shot clinics are part of a broader commitment to keeping veterans healthy year-round. In addition to flu vaccines, VA offers other important immunizations tailored to veterans' health needs. Get your flu shot today. VA encourages all veterans to stay up to date on vaccinations. Veterans enrolled in VA healthcare receive their flu shots as part of their coverage. Flu shots are available at VA medical centers, VA community-based outpatient clinics, participating retail pharmacies, participating urgent care centers, and if you want to learn more, you can contact your local facility, and that's available at www.va.gov/find-locations. And that's VA flu vaccination clinics help veterans stay healthy this season. Next, we have veterans. Join MVP's Military Experiences and Exposures Survey. This is actually from the 1st of January by Jennifer Dean, Associate Director of Cohort and Public Relations Million Veteran Program. Join the Million Veteran Program to take the survey today. VA's Million Veteran Program, MVP, recently launched the Military Experiences and Toxic Exposures Survey to learn more about the ways military experiences and toxic exposures affect health. MVP, VA's largest research effort, is studying health conditions that matter to veterans, including mental health, heart health, cancer, tinnitus, and more. All veterans are invited to join MVP and complete the survey. And of course, that is available at www.mvp.va.gov. What does the Military Experiences and Toxic Exposure Survey ask about? Survey asks questions about your military service and deployment history, occupations in and out of the military job tasks and deployment activities, exposure to toxic or hazardous substances while deployed, exposure to loud sounds, combat experiences, lifestyle, and home exposures. By completing this survey, you can help researchers better understand how to screen for, detect, and prevent and treat health conditions associated with military experiences and exposures. This survey is for health research purposes and will not impact your disability benefits or your access to VA healthcare. How do you take the Military Experiences and Toxic Exposures Survey? All veterans are invited to join the Million Veteran Program and take the survey. To join MVP today, visit www.mvp.va.gov, click Sign In, and then Get Started. Veterans who are already part of MVP can take the survey using the following steps. Visit www.mvp.va.gov and click Sign In. Choose a secure VA partner to sign in. Once you're signed in, select Surveys and then Continue. Click Toxic Exposures Survey icon and click Start the Survey. And that's veterans. Join MVP's Military Experiences and Exposures Survey. Now, we have something for you gamers out there. USAA and Call of Duty Endowment offer free gaming legacy tracer pack for veterans. This is from the 14th of January by Azia Calderhead, Digital Marketing and Communications, Call of Duty Endowment. And they have the caveat, the sharing of non-VA information does not constitute an endorsement of products or services by the Department of Veterans Affairs. Veterans should always verify information with the organization offering the program. Well, I don't know about Call of Duty, but USAA is about as solid as you can get. Once again, USAA has teamed up with Call of Duty Endowment to offer a free Call of Duty Endowment CODE Legacy Tracer Pack for Call of Duty Black Ops 7. And at the launch of Season 1 in Call of Duty Warzone to military service members and veterans, it's just one of the ways we can say thank you for your service. Once you click the link for redemption below, you'll be redirected to a GovX account sign-in page to claim your pack while supplies last. Quantities are limited. And to access the official rules, you can go to www.callofdutyendowment, that's all one word, callofdutyendowment.org/sweepstakes. And the offer online is at www.callofdutyendowment.org/USAA. Welcome to Season 1 Reloaded. The Call of Duty Mid-Season Update, January 8th, 2026, brings more maps, modes, challenges, loadout items, and additional content across multiplayer, zombies, and endgame. including a nuclear collaboration with Fallout involving themed LTMs, the new Deathclaw Hunt limited time world event in Endgame, and the Quantum Exchange event bringing epic rewards straight from the wasteland. About Call of Duty Endowment. The Call of Duty Endowment uses a performance-driven approach to fund organizations delivering the highest standards of quality and cost-efficient veteran job placement services. Beyond funding, CODE, C-O-D-E, partners with grantees to provide advice and support aimed at maximizing their impact. In 2024, the organization's average cost to place a veteran in a job was $628, and this is made possible by a commitment to high-performance standards that are measured on a quarterly basis, including cost per placement, average starting salary, 6-month and 12-month retention rates, full-time versus part-time employment. In addition to supporting its grantees, the endowment is committed to highlighting high performance in the veteran employment space through its Seal of Distinction program, which provides both a $30,000 prize and national recognition to winners of the award. And you can find out more about this by going to www.callofdutyendowment.org/about. And that's USAA and Call of Duty Endowment offer free gaming Legacy Tracer Pack for veterans. You've been listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. I'd like to thank you for joining me for this week's edition of Weekly Reveille and remind you that you can listen to Weekly Reveille and other Sun Sounds of Arizona programming either as it streams or at a time of your choosing by going to the Sun Sounds of Arizona website at sunsounds.org or downloading the Sun Sounds of Arizona app available for your Android phone or tablet from the Google Play Store or from the Apple App Store for your iPad or iPhone. And you can listen to Sun Sounds of Arizona as it streams on your Amazon Dot, Echo, or Show.